Welcome, everybody, to the Chinchilla Picking Podcast. It is March the 10th, 2024. As always, we hope to be entertaining, educational, and uplifting because we want everyone to make money. My name is David Underwood, and I'm joined by the one and only Baron of Bonds, Brandon Beaver. Brandon, how are you?
I'm good. How about you?
I'm doing well. I'm ready for March Madness and college basketball's time to shine. Because everything else is kind of slowed off, get some wings this weekend, watch some hoops, nice. Swish swish, have some fun, go on a couple hikes. I got some time to relax this week coming up, man. So that's what's going on with me. What's up with you?
Same old, same old.
Same old, same old.
That's it, really. Same old, same old. We have to replace the roof on my garage here pretty soon, so I got that going on, but right. Nothing exciting.
There you go. There you go. I tell you what, guys, if you are in the Cincinnati area and you need an electrician to stop by your house, call Tristan Huff.
Did he come yet? Has he been there?
No, not yet. He's going to come this week. I was trying to do some electrician work for those of you who are listening right now myself, and I am not a skilled electrician, and I don't know what I did wrong. I must have rewired something the complete wrong way. So I reached out to Brandon, and he knew somebody, and he's coming out, and he's going to fix my mess up.
Awesome.
At least I tried it, right? At least I tried to do it. Yeah. I attempted. I only got shocked once in doing it. So There you go. All right. How about this? Rules. Brandon and I get together 5 to 10 minutes before the show, and we tell each other what we're going to talk about. You hear the live discussion here on the show. However, today we changed the rules. Brandon and I just said hi, and then we started recording.
Yeah,
this is literally what we just did. We said, hey, what's going on? And we're starting now. I have no idea what Brandon's about to talk about. He has no idea what I'm going to talk about. We're going to change it up and see if this flow works better or worse.
Well, I actually mentioned it in the last episode. So there's your hint.
Oh, okay. So I doesn't help me. Brandon, I want you to take it away and let's find out what you want to talk about.
Okay. So General Electric had their two investor days over the week, one for GE Vernova and one for GE Aerospace. And Vernova was the one that I was actually really the most interested in because it was the one that I was undecided about. On April 2nd, GE will split into two companies. The jet engine business will be called GE Aerospace, and GE Vernova is the power company. I was really iffy about this, mostly because of wind at the beginning, and I still think that they focus too much on wind. It's a tough business. It's a low margin, very competitive business. But their power and gas industry, their business in that is doing really well. So demand electricity, they said, it's set to grow north of 50% between now and 2040 globally. Now, think about this. Think about all of the new data centers that are being set up for artificial intelligence, the electrification of cars. All that's going to increase. Like this is a second revolution in the electrification of the world. The first one coming when electricity was invented. And now we've got, electrification of cars. And all these new data centers popping up. They said that the total addressable market is now, they say, estimated about $265 billion, growing to $435 billion by 2030. $190 billion of this is in the power space. Onshore wind, one positive about this, is now positive free cash flow. They have $116 billion. Backlog and orders. This makes up for about 80% so far of the 2024 revenue, and 50% of 2025's revenue. Now, backlog is kind of a two-edged sword because it's money that you've secured from the customer, but some of that backlog is often trouble, trouble jobs. So things that may or may not happen. Supply backlogs could have caused it, whatever it is. Sometimes it's not always positive, but an 80% of this year's revenue, that's a pretty good number. So margin for wind, they talked about an expansion of margin quite a bit. They use the terminology 10 basis points, up 10 basis points, but I mean, that's relatively flat. So translate that into actual percentage, that's 0.1% margin is up on wins. So flat year over year on that aspect, in my opinion. Electrification backlog doubled in the past year. Onshore backlogs grew by 40%. It's still pretty good guidance here. 30 to 40, 30 to 34 to $35 billion in revenue for this year. $700 billion in revenue to 100 or to $1.1 billion in free cash flow.
Is that just for the wind?
No, this is for all of Vernova.
Okay.
I wish it was just for wind. That would be awesome. In 2025, they're expecting $1.2 billion to $1.8 billion in free cash flow. By 2028, overall for all three, power, gas, and wind, they're looking at 10% EBITDA margin. They say wind will be profitable by the end of 2025. I think I'm holding this. I initially planned when we first started talking about this, I was going to hold GE Healthcare. I was going to hold GE Aerospace, and GE Aerospace still the best of the three. So I'm absolutely still holding GE Aerospace after the split. I've actually sold GE Healthcare recently because I think it's a little overvalued right now. And I've come to terms with the fact that healthcare companies are kind of like the banking industry. And I just don't understand. I understand enough of it to get by, but I just don't understand enough of it to be comfortable holding a healthcare stock at this point in time. So I've gotten rid of that, and I actually may hold GE Vernova now. Given the fact that in 2022 it was losing money, GE Vernova altogether is already profitable. It's wind that they're expecting to be profitable in 2025, but all three of these companies are already profitable. That beat their earlier estimates. So Vernova right now, just like your aerospace and healthcare, they set their guidance. They beat it much earlier than expected, and they've been knocking all three of these companies out of the park.
Question regarding wind. So I've read a number of articles over the last couple of years about these big, huge wind turbines, and that's what we're talking about here, are the big ones like you see in Texas, Illinois, so on and so forth. Iowa has a lot of them. These huge wind turbines that are massive, and it takes like two trucks working side by side to get the blade to the actual side, that kind of thing. How long are they lasting? Because I read some articles, they don't last forever, and then they just have to bury the parts. And that's very irresponsible of GE. I mean, can't we reuse some of these parts?
Yeah, I
Can't
don't.
we recycle this? I mean, am I wrong in that? Because I was reading articles that that's what they're doing.
Yeah, that's a question I don't know the answer to be honest with you. And that goes in with this in particular, EBITDA is probably not a good indicator to go by in regards to that, especially if you're talking about depreciation of parts. So, if it's depreciating that fast, then EBITDA is even less of a indicator to be looking at this point in time. And it is. It's always, at the best you're gonna get net margin. After what you should do is take depreciation out anyways. Net margin, the best you're gonna do is 2 to 3% in this industry, in my opinion. If they beat that, then great. But I honestly wish they would leave wind. They're very focused on it, though. They say that their revenue here is going to grow. I think it's 7% right now. If I remember correctly, it's 7% of their Vernova. Don't quote me on it 100%, but they were
Already quoted.
possibly up to 25% of revenue coming from this, which, I mean, if that happens, then great. But look, the power industry altogether, if you look at wind and nuclear and gas and all of that, it's been over the past 25 to 30 years fairly unpredictable. I mean, 20 years ago, they were saying how bad nuclear is, how, we want to move away from nuclear. And now all of the new technology has made nuclear so much more viable and so much more clean that, I mean, they just had a big meeting. like 110 heads of state or something committing to upping their nuclear output for power because it's more carbon neutral than what it used to be. So, when new technologies come out in this industry, things happen that you don't necessarily expect. So, wind could become somehow more viable in the future, but right now, just I mean, it's an eyesore. I mean,
Well,
traveling through Europe and seeing the wind farms, it's just not, it's not
so
to even look at.
yeah, I mean, it's all right. So thank you. There's a lot of good uses in Europe, especially Scandinavian, for wind and offshore wind, but you can't get the permits and licenses to build the offshore wind in the United States. There's too much headwind against it from groups inside the United States that refuse to allow those to happen. Especially, it's already been said that we would have unlimited free power if we put blades underneath the ocean, let the waves turn the turbines and produce electricity. It would be consistent electricity over and over and over again. But we can't get approval for it because there's, I mean, and it's, I mean, I get the argument and I don't disagree with it. But it could hurt some fish that get caught inside the blades and turbines, and we
Oh
would
yeah, a
be,
lot of them. A lot of them.
I mean, they talked about nets and other things to stop that, but there's only so much you can do. But I mean, there's lots of ways to get free unlimited power from not free, you have to build the infrastructure, but like a lot of the offshore wind. Scandinavian countries are doing well with offshore wind. However, the United States, we can't get the permits and licenses to make that happen because we have too many groups that will oppose it.
Here's an interesting statistic, a couple of interesting statistics actually that I thought of talking about the re-electrification and repowering of the globe. Looking at gas turbines that were installed. So in 2017, they installed 11. These were units commissioned. 11, they had 23 ordered, but there were only 11. 92 in 2023. 2024, they're going to have 110, 120 plus in 2025. In 2025, they're looking at a billion plus revenue. 2023, it was $700 billion. So it's growing that fast.
What do you mean by gas turbine? Is this still the wind we're talking about?
No. I moved into gas talking about the electrification because we're talking about really just the whole re-electrification of the globe. And I think if you're talking about the electrification of the globe in electric cars and new data centers and everything, you could go ahead and invest and take the risk on any AI software company or any electric vehicle company that you want to take a risk on. But the one company that's going to get paid from all of this is General Electric. And that's why I've decided to hold Vernova once it comes my way.
I mean, that's a good outlook. You're playing the electric long game with a company that produces these. I mean, I would go with a solar company, and because we keep 90% of Nevada is uninhabited. We could just build tons of solar farms out there and power the United States with just 10% of the land mass in Nevada. The math already works out. It's already been proven, but we won't do it.
And then also with us kind of flooding the grid, one thing that's happened is that we've had more outages recently, right? General Electric, with services and commissioning and all that stuff going through them, they're able to actually decrease these outage times now by 65%. So a lot of new technology being, quickly adopted here in order to face some of these new problems that are happening with the re-electrification. And I think General Electric's at the helm of it. I think Vernova actually now for me is a buy. Asked me 2 years ago, it was a sell. I plan on getting rid of it right away.
Okay. All right. I like your justification for it. We're moving to more electric cars, electric this, electric that, and you see this as a play on that. So.
Yeah. So looking at the second investor day that they had here, and this was no surprise. It's actually more boring to me because I knew it was going to be good. I knew all of the numbers that were going to come out of GE Aerospace were going to be great. I already knew I was going to hold it. The interesting one for me was Vernova because I didn't know going into it. But Here's an interesting statistics. At any given moment, there are 900,000 people flying on GE powered aircraft. Right?
That's pretty impressive. 900,000 people at any given moment flying
So
on GE powered.
their guidance held. Aerospace is going to grow sales at a low double digits percentage or more. They're going to be pointing to a 10% or 11% increase in sales from this from last year. Operating profit is going to come in between $6 billion and $6.5 billion. Free cash flow more than $5 billion. This is an amazing turnaround. If you talk about just coming from COVID and then even 2017, 2016, when they were having a lot of troubles here, they didn't have any free cash flow and the entire business was losing money. But operating profit margins in 2023 are at 19.2%. That's
Nice.
impressive. That's impressive for an OEM, or original equipment manufacturer. 19.2% is great. Looking at the average profit margin for manufacturing stocks in the S&P 500, it's around 16%.
Really?
Average margin for aerospace, and that's actually higher than I expected it to be too. But the average margin for aerospace and defense companies is about 14%, but you have to discount Boeing from that because Boeing is running at negative 1% right now. So taking Boeing out, it's at 14%.
Well, Boeing has a lot of issues they're trying to work through.
I know. In 2025, aerospace is expecting another year of double-digit sales growth. Operating profit of $7.1 billion to $7.5 billion. They expect global airline passenger traffic to grow around 7% a year on average between last year and 2028. In 2028, speaking of that, they hope to produce $10 billion in operating profit. This is up from $6.3 billion expected this year. And looking at that, it's an average annual growth rate of around 12%. They also said that they plan to buy back $15 billion in shares. The dividend is going to be about 30% of net income. This works out to returning around 75% of their revenue back to shareholders. So I like that as well.
Nice, nice, nice. I do want to mention that if Athena Power, which was the company back in 2001 and that runs all the solar power plants in Nevada, if they had listened to a guy who kept emailing them by the name of David Underwood back in 2001, we wouldn't be having all these troubles. I emailed them a number of times in a row. I was getting a website put together to take $1 a month contributions. I was trying to get a few million people to do it, and all the money would go to expanding solar power plants. It would all be paid for by contributions. Athena wouldn't have to put any money out, but they kept denying me. It's still a valid plan.
It is
It's
absolutely.
still a valid idea.
You know what's
One
funny?
dollar a month. Who wouldn't pay $1 a month? There's millions of Americans I know that would pay $1 a month to provide solar power electricity.
Yeah, absolutely. You know what's funny, though? Harkening back to last week's show, one of the board members did the introductions at the very beginning of the Vernova conference. And he's the CEO of a company called Linde. And
Okay.
his entire introduction, he just goes up there. He says, at Linde, we're the world's largest provider of helium. That's all I'll say about Linde. He's like, that's all I'll say about that. And then he introduced everybody.
Nice. And that does tie into last week's show about the helium. Yes,
Yeah.
fine. Yeah, that's
And it
funny.
seemed like the crowd was relatively confused by that, but he was very happy to say it.
Right? Because like who knows? Who knows what these companies are who deal in helium? I mean, nobody really pays attention. They're not the sexy companies that we want to talk about. You know, they're the boring ones that make money that consistently do a good job. Is what it is, right? All right, man. What else you got? What's
That's
next?
everything for me, sir.
Oh, what?
Told
What?
me
That's
guys
it?
went 10, 15 minutes, didn't I? Did I not?
Close. All right. So let me get into a couple of things real quick. I'm gonna first here. I'm gonna talk about Tesla for a second and explain what's going on with this. It was just bad news after bad news with Tesla, and that's why it's driven the stock down. But I want to break down the different bad news. China sales were lower than what was expected, right? And that's because they're competing with a company in China that gets subsidies from the state of China, and Tesla doesn't. So it's very hard to compete in that environment. So they were a little bit lower. So Tesla fell on that. Then there was the 2.2 million recall that wasn't really a quote unquote recall that hit the headline news, and it fell on that news, right? And other companies, American companies, Ford and so forth and so forth, and Rivian had bad numbers. All these electric companies started coming out bad earnings, and so that it pulled down Tesla with it. Then at the same time, this is all in a 2 week span or a 3 week span. Then at the same time, a I don't know, a protester, terrorist, I think protester, decided he wanted to protest cars and automobiles, and so he burned down the electric power station in Germany that powered the Tesla plant in Europe,
Oh, wow.
which I think is shooting your own self in the foot. It's an electric car plant, which is better for the environment than the gas power cars he could have gone to, you know, because they're in Germany, Volkswagen's down the road. But that shut down the plant for a number of days, and that caused the stock to drop. So the stock has just been hit by one headline after another headline after another headline. I still believe in the company long term. However, like, these headlines have to stop at some point. It just can't keep having, and like all these but one, the China sales, right? That's one that Tesla could have controlled and done better sales job of. All the other ones, Tesla has no control over, and it's not really anything due to management in Tesla, right?
Right.
It's just it blows my mind. But the stock has dropped from at the start of all these headlines 250 and went all the way down to 170 at one point. That's a huge drop in the stock. I still believe in it long term. I'm not buying anymore at this moment. I'm just holding my position and waiting for it to go back up. But that I just wanted to break down. That's what happened to the Tesla stock. And I got it wrong when I said that, you know, I'm buying and holding. I was up when it was at 250. I was profitable. I was like, great, I'm making tons of money here. It's going to go higher. And then the headline started. And that's where it all went down for me, I guess, if you want to say it that way.
Well, it depends on how long you're looking to hold too.
I'm looking to hold a while, so I'm not in no hurry to sell.
Yeah, so if it's like 5 years, then you know, 5 years, let's look at it then, and then say, you know, were you wrong buying it
Yeah.
then? Because look how long I had to hold through losses on Disney and Meta
Yeah, and you've made quite a bit of money off Meta and Disney both.
and General Electric.
Yeah, exactly. So you've had some good calls there. Yeah, I believe in a long-term Tesla, the robotics, in that they're gonna have those robots in their warehouses moving the equipment relatively quick. You know, and that's gonna be a big profit gainer for them in the future. So
Yeah.
I believe in that. But I just wanted to cover that real quick. And then I want to point out something that, you know, when we tell people read headlines and do your research and everything, I'm going to read that now. I was on Fidelity and I was on the news and then I was on company news and, or no, not company news, market news. So you know, I was down there a little bit in the threads. And these two articles, one is right above the other one, and they're dated the same date, March 8th, right?
Yeah.
So I'm gonna read the headlines of these two articles, just the headline, not the whole article, just the
What
headline.
website is this from? Is this from MSN or what?
Now this is I got it off Fidelity, but one is from MT News Wires and the other one's from Bazinga.
Okay.
All right. So let me read these two headlines, and they're right next to each other when I was searching on on Fidelity. The first one says U.S. equity indexes decline this week as Fed Chair Powell jobs report offer mixed views on the economy. Right, so equities are declining because of what Fed Chair Powell said. Right, all right. Very next line down, different article. Right, the headline reads: Stock market hits record highs as Powell hints at red rate cuts. I can't make this up. It is two articles saying ex opposite things about Jerome Powell and that he's a ability to move markets. And it just goes to show you that, like, you got to do your research is the point I'm making with this. Like, you could read these articles, just great. They usually have good stats and information to back up the case they're trying to make. But here are two articles released the same date by two different news organizations saying two opposite things. And they both, if you read the articles, they go in there and try to build their case for why they believe one or the other. And it's just there's a lot of viewpoints out there. So when Brandon and I are sitting here telling you, do your research, make sure you understand the company, that's what we're talking about.
Yeah, so I remember one of the first stocks I ever bought, I wish I still had it, was Apple. And this was back in like probably 2011, 2012. And very first earnings report I ever held a stock through. And an article popped up in my notifications on my phone saying that Apple had a huge miss in their quarterly revenue and their profit. I remember specifically reading that their China ecosystem was declining. And I immediately was like, oh crap, you know, I bought Apple at its peak and it's never going to go any higher. I'm freaking out a little bit, right? Terrible earnings, so to speak. And I actually do the research into it. I find out none of it was true. None of it. Now, the Chinese ecosystem for Apple does appear to be declining now, but that's 11 years later, right? Wasn't true back then. And then the other thing that I want to point out too, if you're on MSN, and the reason why I said MSN, they post articles from a lot of like the Motley Fool, and a few others too. I probably shouldn't name them out loud, but whatever. That are all opinion, and a lot of them are all hype or all negative, and they're coming from one way or the other. You really have to kind of sort through the, you know, the stuff to find the grains of truth.
Yeah, you do have to sort through. When I go through Fidelity's just listing articles as they come out. That's all they're doing. They're not sorting through them. So that's why it was just funny that these two landed right one on top of each other. But it goes to show you, like, you can find an article to prove whatever point you want to prove. The data and the research is what counts.
Yeah, and this is why I learned myself how to read balance sheets so I could come up with, you know, I could figure all these things out for myself. I don't have to listen to somebody else tell me what to do because you have no idea what that person's what's the best word?
Agenda.
Agenda is. Yeah, that's the good. You have no idea what their agenda is. So learn how to do it yourself. That's why I sat through 6 hours of boring investor days for General Electric on my own this week so that I would know what was said and I wouldn't have to read an article telling me what was said.
Right, exactly. So talking about that, let's read an article on Pfizer on its investor day. This article, so you think I'm joking? This article is on CNBC. It's written by Annika Kim Constantino, which I've quoted her articles before here on the show. This one came out this morning at 8 a.m. and the headline reads: Pfizer is betting big on cancer drugs to turn business around after COVID decline. Here's what to know. I read the article, right? So it's a good article. It covers some things. It gives a lot of opinion in it, though. So you have to be careful with this one. But I found it funny because just a few months back, we're talking about Pfizer is betting on the weight loss pill to turn its business around from COVID. And you and I talked about the COVID decline, the sales decline, how they're going to use the money, and the weight loss was direction go. But now it's cancer. So Pfizer is basically what I'm getting is Pfizer's trying to find another way to replace that money they made from COVID, and they haven't found their compass, the point of north. They haven't found the one thing that they want to focus on. Now they're shifting towards cancer drugs as they hope to have that. They made a purchase of Seagen. It's a smaller company with cancer drugs in the pipeline. It helped grow their cancer program by quite a bit. They launched a $4 billion cost cutting program, so they're trying to do that there as well. Seagen cost the company $43 billion in the acquisition of it, so they're really hoping in the cancer drug pipeline. It doubled their pipeline to 60 different experimental programs. So this is now Pfizer's new direction. Maybe it stays it. Maybe in 6 months we'll be talking again about Pfizer's quote unquote new direction.
For
Who knows?
the best of humanity and for the best of this company, to be honest with you, their strength has been cancer for a long time. They should have never taken any focus away and put it on weight loss. Let the other guys do that. That's fine. They were steps behind anyways. They didn't, they lost on the FDA trials there with the cancer or with the weight loss drug that they were working on. But cancer, they've made a lot of progress in cancer, especially in regards to prostate cancer. It was a reason why I bought the stock in the first place. So I'm glad that they're starting to shift their focus more towards cancer because their research in the cancer line has been a strength for a long time.
Let's talk about that since you brought it up. Pfizer's existing oncology portfolio is also facing some competitive pressure. Revenue from the blockbuster breast cancer drug Ibrance and the prostate cancer treatment Zante, which Pfizer shares with Astellas Pharma, has declined over the past year. Both drugs are expected to lose market exclusivity in 2027. What that means, market exclusivity, if for anyone listening right now, that means that now generic drugs could come in and sell the same drug at a lower price, and it's not just you have to go through them. So that's going to be a definite headwind for them.
Yeah, it absolutely will, but still focusing on new drugs to come out for cancer research. They've got a very good team working on cancer there. So I have faith that they'll continue moving in that direction. I'll be honest with you, I sold the stock. I took a loss on it because I wanted to add more into Disney. And I did successfully. So I'm happy about that. But it could have struck when the iron was hot here before this drug went and lost its market exclusivity, which is going to happen soon, like you just said. And they should have focused a lot more revenue on that already so that they wouldn't be losing. They should have focused more advertising and things like that on it. In my opinion, that's where they should have been.
Well, in advertising, they did just take out a Super Bowl ad to try to get the word out there about their cancer fight. But
Yeah, and I liked that. I saw it.
so let's talk more about the oncology division and how they plan to shift things around, right? So in regards to Pfizer's oncology division, here's something interesting that I did not know, and I don't know how accurate this is, but the article goes into how they want to shift its to biologic drugs as its main source of revenue, increasing the proportion of those treatments in this pipeline from currently 6% to 65% by 2030. So biologics are treatments derived from living sources, such as animals or humans, including vaccines, stem cell treatments, and gene therapies. They're among the most expensive prescription drugs in the United States. So before the Seagen deal, 94% of Pfizer's cancer products were small molecule drugs. Those medicines are made up of chemicals and have low molecular weights, right? So you're asking, like, why are they doing this? Why are they switching, if you will? So they're switching, and they've said that this is why they're switching. Biologics represent, quote, a more durable revenue potential, end quote. This has to do with Joe Biden's Inflation Reduction Act. A provision of that law that was passed allows Medicare to start negotiating the prices of biologics as early as 13 years after they receive FDA approval, compared with just 9 years for small molecule drugs. So the pharmaceutical industry, mainly Pfizer in this case, has said that, well, we're going to stop investing in small molecules and we'll start investing in biologics, which are more expensive to the end user, the people who need these treatments. But this is the direction that Pfizer is going to go because the government said that, hey, we could start negotiating prices earlier with a small molecule at 9 years. So they want to go to the one where they could keep 4 more years of higher prices in order to do this. Not that it's better for anybody at all. It's just that it's more cost effective for the companies. First initial thoughts, Brandon, go ahead.
No surprise.
Well, see, this is my criticism, like, of the pharmaceutical industry, right? I like that we're the most innovative pharmaceutical industry in the world, in the United States and Great Britain, right? Two areas where they're producing the most effective medicines around the world. The most of it come out of the United States, second Britain. We produce a ton. And so research innovation is great. However, now it's so much about, making a profit to the point that they're just going to go with the one that they can continue to hold on to that little edge just 4 years longer in this. And I don't like it, but I understand. And it's, it's as long as they make a product that works, I guess it doesn't matter, right?
Right. I don't know. I wish it wasn't like that. There's so many disincentives, perverted incentives, in my opinion, in regards to our healthcare system and pharmaceuticals that it kind of makes me a little sick. But I like their cancer research. So.
Yeah, they are going to focus on cancer research. It is going to make a majority of the portfolio. In fact, breast cancer's contribution to their oncology, it's going to actually drop. They're going to drop how much they put in there. They're going to focus more on genital areas of cancer for men and women both, because they see growth in that area, which I don't know if that's a sign for us normal people around here. Like, why are the pharmaceutical companies see growth in that area? Should we all be concerned about our genital areas going forward? What's with the heightened growth in this?
Well, 80% of Americans over the age of 80% of men over the age of 80, when they die, have a form of prostate cancer found in the autopsy.
Really? I did not know that. Really?
A lot of it doesn't kill you, so you don't notice it, right? But yeah, by the time you're over 80, most likely you've got a form of prostate cancer.
It's crazy. Crazy. All right. Well, there you go. That's my article on Pfizer. I'm not buying it. I'm still not buying it. They're shifting the direction very quickly here. This is just what is it, Brandon? 6 month or less that they shifted from weight loss to cancer now.
I mean, it's really focus that they're shifting to, but they're really building upon a base that's already there. So there's that. I mean, the cancer research has been pretty good for Pfizer for the past 2 years. They just didn't really shine lights on it until now.
Fair enough. Fair enough. All right. Next one I want to get into real quick. It says why Walmart's quick success in generative AI should have Google worried. Right. So here's what this is from author Michelle Castillo, published on CNBC. It goes in to talk about how Walmart. So let's say I want to search for a Super Bowl party, right? And I'm looking for plates for a Super Bowl party. Well, Walmart's going to give you the plates, but it's also going to give you other recommendations using AI for parties that in general that people have, like forks and knives and wings or whatever. You said Super Bowl, so probably pizza or something will also pop up in there in the search results. And these are going to be like how Instacart does it with ads. So Walmart is doing this with every single search result on their platform, that you could find everything you're looking for when you type in party. It's going to have everything listed in a one-stop shop with better pictures and more informative, and know exactly which ones are mostly bought, yada, yada, yada. The reason why in the article it goes into why this is a problem for Google is that Google has made a lot of money recently, over the past few years, 3 to 5 years, with people shopping from Google. People go there, they type in something, and they shop from there. And through the Google sells the ads, and we go to the actual shop once we decide and actually purchase that item, right? And then we do it for each individual thing. But now, if Walmart via the Walmart Plus program, which is you pay money to be a Walmart Plus member, and you get to use the self checkouts because Walmart's getting rid of all the self checkouts for theft. Walmart Plus members have all kinds of benefits, but one of the other benefits is this AI shopping method, and they believe that their people are going to come there. They're going to start searching at Walmart instead of Google, and they believe that that's going to take away some of the ads if more companies start doing this and using AI generative to push the sales and push the programs, that less people will be using Google and just hit the bottom line, mainly because Google fumbled the AI Gemini rollout. And there were so many problems being addressed with it. I'm not going to go into it because a lot of them are political and and biasness being related, DEI issues. I don't want to go into on this show, but I just want to say they had problems with the Gemini rollout.
Yeah, they did.
And so they had to reel it back in and then fix these issues. Well, Walmart hasn't had any issues with their AI rollout of their program and their search bars and how it's working effectively. And they believe it's taking market share away from Google. Brandon?
Well, we talked about Instacart's doing the same thing.
Yeah. Instacart. Yeah, this is the same thing that Instacart's doing. Walmart's just making it even more complex, but better. They're seeing an increase in sales due to it. Walmart got a lot of this software and programming when they bought Jet.com years ago. That was a purchase Walmart made a long time ago, but they got a lot of that programming then. And then with AI rollout, Walmart just had their own AI program already in place, and they just started it up, and it's doing better than Google's, is what this article goes on to say, basically.
Yeah. You said doo-doo.
It's doing better than Google's, is what I said. So it's interesting. It's interesting. I mean, Walmart's a huge company. People underestimate how big Walmart is, but and how fast they can quickly implement something. But it's very, very interesting. I recommend you read it.
It's a new way of doing things. It's a great way of advertising.
Yes, it is. Selling ads. Like, every company sell ads now, man. It's crazy. Everywhere you go, there's ads, ads, ads. I don't want ads on apps, you know? But then you got to pay extra now, subscription models, in order to get no ads.
Yep.
It's insane where they're going with these ads.
I ignore most commercials, like 99% of them, unless like some sort of like amazing looking food comes on TV. Then I'm usually ignoring it. But it would be kind of hard to ignore if you're shopping, looking at your phone, using a Kroger app or a Walmart app, trying to figure out what aisle your groceries are in.
Right.
You go to that grocery, and then an ad pops up for what you're shopping for, and it's cheaper than what you expected. You know, that's a good way of doing it.
It is a very good way of doing it. It's very effective. Very effective. All right. Last one here. I'm not going to read the author's names because I would pronounce it wrong. Actually, I'll try. Here we go. China warns overall pressure on employment yet to ease. This is written by Ellen Zhang, Liang Ping Gao, and Ryan Wu from Reuters.
You read them anyways.
I did. I do know how to say hello in Mandarin. Ni hao. And then I'm sorry is she she. So those are the two words I know in Mandarin. That's it. All right, so the article
There's
is going to go on
dialects, though. So, like, can you, is that northern China, or southern China?
That's northern.
Okay.
All right, so China, they made some news. I listened to some Bloomberg reporters yesterday afternoon talking about this as well. That's how I spend my weekends, listening to Bloomberg, reading reports. I'm a very fun guy. But everybody was talking about China because they had their assembly, their big, huge political assembly this week. And they were talking about where they wanted to go. But China's aiming for a growth around 5%. Well, China's gross domestic product last year grew at 5.2%. So it's kind of even a 0.2% decline from year over year. But the problem with the jobs is China could see 11.79 million college students graduate this year. They're going to be looking for jobs, right? More than one in five of the roughly 100 million Chinese aged 16 to 24 were unemployed in June of 2023. That's the latest figure that they released to the world, right? China resumed publication of the data in January, but now they leave out college students and they put youth unemployment at 14.9% in December. Wow. So they're changing the numbers. They're saying we're not going to put college students in because they shouldn't count. But the unemployment is 14.9%, right? So authorities, basically the Chinese government's under pressure to create jobs because they have a shrinking of white collar jobs due to a weak economy. So they're trying to steer people to take vocational technical jobs as they try to advance their manufacturing sector and rely less on the West amid technology curbs imposed by the United States. Basically, they're saying they want to rely less on the West because the United States is imposing tariffs and it's hurting their economy.
Yeah.
This year, China aims to create more than 12 million new urban jobs and keep its survey base urban unemployment rate at around 5.5%. If they create 12 million new jobs, that's just going to suffice for the people coming out of college graduating. That's all that's going to do. You still have lots of other people who are unemployed. Last year, they created 12.44 million new urban jobs with the urban unemployment at 5.2% on average. So that's not too bad. But the problem is China's economy. China's economy has not been doing well. It all started with the real estate sector and those huge companies that they thought was going to trickle out and affect the world economy, and it didn't. It was just a blip on the United States. When those companies finally fell and they lost all these deals and they went into default, and that's what started all for China and this coming down of the economy, and their GDP was falling and the unemployment was going up, and that's what started the ball rolling. Everybody's expecting a bad year in China this year, and this is not helping. Brandon?
And there's been so much stimulus in China that who knows how much money they actually have to, you know, kind of rebound out of this. But, you know, I tell you what, this could be and should be at least a good entry point for negotiations between the United States and China for real, fair, open, and free trade, unlike what we've had for the past 30 years. It really should be, but we'll see if it is.
It should be, but I mean, I've been very critical on the show, and I know lots of other podcasters have been very critical of China and how they cause inflation on their currency just so that they can maintain that it's cheaper to build products there than anywhere else.
Yeah.
They continue to do that, and they're going to continue to do that, and they'll just print more money and make their currency worth less so that, you know, hey, I could build the same thing in China for, you know, 1/50th of the cost. And they do this on purpose to keep manufacturing jobs there. And that's the biggest pain point in the United States-China negotiations.
It is, but, you know, the funny thing about that is we actually benefit from it. Nobody seems to kind of catch on to that because it keeps inflation lower here than what it normally would be.
Right. But I mean, you could also make the argument that once we started doing that on a mass scale going to China, it took jobs away from manufacturing plants in Mexico where we had them.
Yeah, well, that's true. And there's been currency wars going on for like the past 15 years. And
yeah.
China's kind of their own victim.
Yes. Yes, they are. Yes, they are. But I just want to point that out there. So it looks like more headwinds for China. I haven't invested anything in China in a while since Didi, and I barely made a profit off of Didi. Was the last thing I invested in China. Brandon, Alibaba, anything China related?
No, I made negative dollars. I made zero. It wasn't as bad as what it could have been. So I somehow still wound up edging out market gains that year. But the summer was pretty tough for me when I was a bull in the China shop. That really got me.
Right. I love that podcast episode, A Bull in the China Shop. Look
it
up.
God, don't listen to it. Go back and listen to when I said, listen to my mistakes later, where I talk about my mistakes with China. Don't listen to the bull with the China shop and go off and buy Chinese stocks because of it. Cause it was a big mistake. One of the biggest lessons I've ever learned in investing was to never take for granted the fact that a foreign government and its politics can severely affect what should be great businesses.
Exactly. And it's going to get worse for China this year, I think. So that's what I'm looking at. All right, Brandon, final thoughts, man. Take us away. What you got?
You know what? General Electric, I called it a buy last week. It's up 7% since I called it a buy. Fair value right now. I think we can go up to $180 a share. So what is that, like 6%? I don't know. You may have missed the boat on this one if you didn't buy last week. I still like it. I'm still holding it. I think there's still great upside for the long-term future. But if you're kind of a short-term swing trade player, maybe, maybe not.
All right. I'm going to talk about RIG. I think RIG is a good short swing trade. Swing trade is anything that I define as anything longer than a month, but not longer than 6 months. I give it that time range for a swing trade. I believe RIG's going to go higher. And the reason I'm saying this is BP and Chevron CEOs over the weekend were on Bloomberg talking about how they see more exploration needed in the Gulf of Mexico for oil drilling. So who's going to benefit from that? Transocean, that's RIG, RIG. Transocean is the ones who actually own and operate the rigs, and they drill the holes, and then BP comes in and they have their drill pump out all the oil out. That's how these things work. So they could be a big winner on that in the swing trade region. And I know that Schlumberger just took a hit down recently, so that's one I would definitely look at maybe again on this news of more exploration in the Gulf of Mexico, making a purchase and maybe on that one. RIG is a definite, Schlumberger is a maybe. I do also want to talk about NVIDIA finally came down from where it's high, is still at $850 a share, which is outrageous. But still, man, I mean, I don't know, man. I guess it's to the moon for NVIDIA. They're going to be the number one company in the world here very shortly at this rate they're going. Palo Alto Networks came back down from their rise back up. Am I buying them since they came back down again? No. I believe that they came back down for a reason. People piled in on the swing back, the bounce back up, if you will, after the big drop. And I think they overbought it. They went from oversold to overbought in 1 week. And now I think they're just kind of, let's just sit right where they're at their fair value. So that's where I'm looking at. I'm still holding Novo Nordisk. I'm doing very well on that, which is making up for my Tesla losses right now. Novo Nordisk profitable for me. Thank you, Novo Nordisk, for continuing to pump out weight loss drugs. I appreciate that. I still think that one's a solid buy. And Bitcoin is still rolling, and we haven't even hit the halving event yet. After a halving event, Bitcoin usually goes higher. If you look at the historical charts, they go higher by a lot. They're already at all-time highs, and we haven't hit the halving event yet. I think there's a good upside here. I'm kind of sketchy right now at the level it's at. But if we haven't hit the halving event, there's going to be more upside this year. Whether or not it drops back down to 60 and then hits the halving event, and then we have upside, that could be a case too. So I just want to say be careful right now at the levels of that. I do see more upside for the year as a whole for Bitcoin there, barring any big world news and geopolitical events that would affect it. So, Brandon, it looks like you have a thought. You look like
No,
you're
I
getting ready to
just
say something.
I'm my mind's blown here. We thought Nvidia was overvalued at 450 a share,
I did, right?
and not
Like
just you, but me too.
I admitted I got that wrong. I said I completely got this one wrong, and it's still going higher. So who knows where that ceiling is for
You know what?
NVIDIA?
I think a lot of this is hopes and dreams. It's a great company. They knock earnings out of the park every quarter. They seem to perform the impossible, but I also think that we're pricing in the impossible. So.
Just be careful.
Yeah.
All right, everybody. Thank you for listening. Please hit the subscribe button and follow us. As always, we hope we have been entertaining, educational, and uplifting because we want everyone to make money. Have a good night.
Have a good night.